You're listening to ThoughtCast. I'm Jenny Atiyah, and I'm pleased to say that I have Doc Searles here. Doc is the famous blogger and co-author of the Clue Train Manifesto. Doc, would you mind giving a brief summary of the book for those who are unfamiliar?
The book is actually it's probably the only book that has ever been a website that turned into a book. And the website itself was a rant. There were four guys that got together in 1999 and decided to say things that nobody else was saying with zero risk and no big expectations. And it got very widely covered and linked to. And we got a book offer and we wrote the book, and then the book became a business bestseller. It's subtitled The End of Business as Usual. And more or less what we posited was that the web and the net were not about finding more and more ways for the supply side to spam the demand side and to trap people into pens where they would have to buy something, but rather an environment that improved markets enormously and gave customers and everybody far more freedom to do whatever the hell they pleased. And so that's pretty much how it turned out. And what seemed to us pretty obvious has turned out to look like prophecy because nobody else was saying it at the time.
Well, that was my next question.
Okay.
How prophetic has the book proved to be?
Well, actually, I mean, we weren't that specific about it. It was basically a rant against the dot-com madness, and that was the context of it when we wrote it. At that time, I think as much as $25 billion a year were being poured into just Silicon Valley alone, into companies that were absolutely doomed from the start. And so I think just mocking that and expecting it to fail proved to be true. The second thing, though, is that we talked about the web essentially as a place where an infinite variety of things could happen and anybody could initiate them, where power was not concentrated in any one place, where anybody could participate.
I believe one of the key points was this is a place for human-to-human interaction, unlike the mainstream media. I'm interested in whether you think the mainstream media is attempting to duplicate that experience, attempting to imitate what that human-to-human interaction is like on the web.
Well, the mainstream media is trying its best to adopt some of the methods, blogging, podcasting, syndicating what they call content. It's a word I can't stand. I write, you know, books and articles and editorial and things like that. I never thought of it as content. To me, content is packing material. It's container cargo. But the problem for the mainstream media in the long run is that anybody can transmit and anybody can receive. There's just no need in the long run for transmitters, even, you know, except to fill in places where the net doesn't get. We're very vested in the infrastructures of scarcity, and it's very hard for the people who are benefiting from the infrastructures of scarcity to get their heads and their business models around the infrastructures of abundance. The net fundamentally, and we didn't put it this way, but this is kind of the way it's evolved. The net was created to reduce to zero the distance between any two things on it. I refer to this as the giant zero. And if I write a book, the next one will be called The Giant Zero. It's a vacuum. There's a nothing between you and I, whether we're sitting here in the same room or we're on the opposite sides of the country. And in the long run, that's what it wants to be. I mean, there is friction involved here and there. There are actual distances involved here and there. But the net is designed to reduce to zero the distance between everybody and to increase in value itself and increase in usefulness with every new person and device that's attached to it. So trying to artificially create scarcity in the middle of that is a big mistake, and that's something the mainstream tries to do.
To go back to the question about how prophetic your book is and was, this is 2007. We're here at the Integrated Media Conference. We're looking at the situation today and hopefully projecting into the future. With what you know now, is there anything you'd want to rewrite in your manifesto?
Oh, I'd like to rewrite almost everything, actually. I mean, it's just, you know, that was 1999, and the context was 1999. There's a great many things that weren't invented then. RSS had not come along. Podcasting had not come along yet. The iPod was barely here, there, if at all. The main thing I would say now that we didn't occur to us then, maybe you did say it somewhere in the book, I don't know. I haven't read it in a long time either, so is that the real new development that's going on in the net now is a division between the static and the live. The static web is the one that we understand in terms of real estate and construction. It's what we build and architect and design and has sites and locations that are on the information highway, and we look for traffic and hits and a bunch of stuff like that. All of this is the language that we conceive it in terms of building, okay? And there's nothing wrong with that. That's the static web. That's what Google searches. when we post something that goes up now, and when Technorati, which searches sources of RSS feeds, finds that within a minute and indexes it, and when that happens, when I can blog something and then find it on Technorati 2 minutes later and write about it, and I can syndicate that search and I can put that into a blog, that's the live web. That is an entirely different animal. It's cheaper, it's easier, anybody can do it. It's all mashupable. You know, the notion of mashups just really came along about a year ago. We're at the IMA conference where interestingly most of the talk is about technology. Most of it's about the implications of technology, and people try to get their heads around it in terms of Web 2.0 and social media. I think Web 2.0 is the name we're going to give to the next crash, and I think social media is a buzz phrase that means nothing. I think it's what matters is live.
Earlier today, you wrote on your blog something that one of the speakers here, Tom Garacci of Gather.com, said at the conference, that social media, if anything else, it's underrated, which is quite the opposite of what you just said.
Well, I think he's right in spirit and he's wrong in letter. I think 10 years from now we'll be talking about the live web and forgetting about social media. But I think his point is a good one. I think that people connecting through the web is huge. It's just absolutely huge. And there are all these structures of interaction between people that are entirely ad hoc or largely ad hoc is going to do nothing but grow. I have my doubts, and I don't know enough about Gather.com, so I basically wrote the quote down and then left the room, because I got called on a tech support call. But I think the idea of trying to be an intermediator and say, I'm going to be the one who gathers all these people in this one place, and I'll take care of it all for you, in most cases doesn't work. I mean, even I think a company like Amazon or eBay is succeeding now in part because they work inside an infrastructure that's external to them. They, by having open APIs, by being able to...
Can you explain that, open API?
Okay, an API is an application program interface. Basically, think of it as Lego blocks, or think of it as Tinker Toys. They're just simply ways that you can take different services. Think Amazon's a service, right? Google Maps is a service. I was looking at one today that's about astronomy, and I pointed to that. You mentioned a star, you can, as an API at that site, and you can essentially, you know, have your blog or your website or whatever it is, not just point to that, but take the data from that. It's a picture, it's a something else, and have it automatically put into your site, and have this done in a more or less live way. It becomes automated, it's back end. And you don't need a programmer all the time to do it. It might help in some cases, but for the most part, these pieces are pluggable, and they're going to only get easier, you know. So that's the movement that's going on here. Everything that works is going to be conceived as something that works with other things.
Last question, Doc Searles. You're blogging this conference. Anything you heard today that's worthy of writing up?
Well, the last thing I came from, which is NPR's discussion of its site. I was at NPR last week, and I saw some of this in action there. They're doing a great job. But what's interesting to me is that it's very clear that what's happening at the website that's at its best is actually live web stuff. It's what's going on with the podcast, what's going on with RSS. It's the code you can borrow from there and stick somewhere else. It's the way it works in a symbiotic way with all the member stations and with the users. The biggest thing earlier than that was actually discovering for the first time for myself BitTorrent. And now torrent, take a word like torrent, that's live also. We're not very far away right now from, say, Frontline putting out a copy of a program on the web as what's called a BitTorrent seed, being the first server serving up that thing, and then everybody who views it also being a server for it, completely offloading the costs of doing that, spreading it across everything. So everybody, see, here's the key thing, and this is something we did point out in Cluetrain. What the web does is it allows everybody to produce as well as consume. The notion of a consumer is dead. People who only consume is an artifact of an industrial age that is essentially over. And anybody who supports or pays attention to or works with the fact that anybody can produce as well as consume is going to be okay. Anybody who thinks I need to trap those consumers and continue to like shake them down for money or whatever else it is going to fail in the long run, because that system won't work anymore.
Well, on that note, Doc Searles, thanks so much for the interview.
Thank you.